you know.
From the Club Raymond Motor Cars Studio, you're listening to News Radio 1290 WJNO, an iHeartRadio station.
The thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the sponsors and don't necessarily reflect those of this station or iHeartMedia.
This is the Family Center for Recovery Show. Join us now to learn ways to begin the path to recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. Learn more at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Here we are once again, Sunday afternoon. You've tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery Show. I am your host, Peter Nathan. Thank you for joining us and making a part of your Sunday afternoon. And with us today, Micah Robbins. Micah, welcome to the show.
Good to see you again, Peter. A pleasure as always.
Likewise, Dad. A lot of cool things going on since the last time you were on the show, and our listeners always enjoy listening to and hearing the things that you have and what's going on out there. So this weekend, very special, our veterans.
We're just talking about that. It's Veterans Day coming right up, and this is the opportunity to thank those that have served so bravely. It's real challenging, certainly in this day and age too, because the work we do in the substance field, substance prevention, and also helping those in recovery and treatment, that our veterans are one of the most affected populations by the opioid epidemic, as well as just having to deal with certainly the effects of their brave service, both physically and mentally. And unfortunately, that does come with the opportunities to develop substance use disorders. We're just looking at some recent data, and what they're showing is that veterans are twice as likely to develop a substance use disorder and opiate use disorders. And as you were looking at as this epidemic continues to roll across the country, we have over a 20% increase year over year in deaths, with over 65,000 people dying from drug overdoses last year. And that's a 20% increase the year over that, and things aren't trending much better. But it's definitely an opportunity to remember what our veterans have done for all of us. Peter, you and I were talking before the show, just our own families and the sacrifices they've made, and for us, and for what we get to do every day. But what a great opportunity to reach out, and especially if it's a family member, what a wonderful opportunity. But just making sure you thank those that have served bravely, gallantly, and giving us, again, the opportunity to do what we get to do every day as Americans. So definitely want to thank them, and anything that we can do for them, that's a no-brainer, front of the line.
Yeah, and I think that I know everybody out there as a listener has either a family member, somebody who's serving or has actively served in our armed forces. And not really the thing. What I'd like to do at this point is maybe take a brief pause and remember those that have passed away serving our country and that are no longer with us. So let's take a brief moment and remember those that have served our country. This weekend is very special and dear. Family-wise, my father-in-law, John P. Jenkins, he was a major in the U.S. Army, and he was also very active in AA. He worked the phones. He was very active in meetings, and he was a sponsor. And one of my many treasures and remembrances of John is the Little Red Book from AA. And it just makes such an impact, and it's something that I kind of carry with me and that remember him throughout the day. So, but our men and women that have served our country's tremendous amount of stress that's placed upon them when they come back and they try to acclimate to civilian life can be very challenging. We were talking earlier about your involvement and people that you know over at the veterans, your thoughts as we're talking about vets and people that you know and that are working with.
Well, for those that haven't been over to the Veterans Administration Hospital here in West Palm Beach, it's off Blue Heron. It's a big building. It's a big edifice. But when you walk in there, you just are reminded about the enormity of the mission that they are under. And it's from the day that they're enlisted to, really, for the rest of their lives. You know, service doesn't end with a tour. But I think that that's an important thing for people to remember now, too, is that, you know, we've been in a conflict almost nonstop now for going on 17 years. And these tours, you're hearing about veterans coming back, and it's not one tour, two tours. It's 7 deployments, 8 deployments, 12 deployments. And the toll of that in the most inhospitable, war-torn just places on the planet that no one would want to be. And they go at it without flinching. And to see what they see, to feel what they feel, both emotionally and certainly physically, is something that, you know, we can't even put into words, really, or have that experience unless you're there. So it's understandable that you're looking for answers when you come home, and you want to put those memories to bed. You want to try to take care of that physical pain that may have just ravaged you. We see the injuries that our veterans suffer from, and you know, we as a community really want to make sure we're doing what we can. So I guess for me, and I, you know, I know from my family, not only my father, my grandfather, most of my uncles, several of my cousins that are bravely serving right now, overseas. My grandfather-in-law, who is, 87 and, a wonderful guy, I'll give a little shout out to him. He's recovering from a full hip replacement, right now, but he, served bravely in Korea. And, but for all those, we want to say thank you. But again, take the opportunity, contact the VA, go volunteer, just go and hang out and say hi and thank you. And especially this year, it's this time of year, it's Thanksgiving. It's coming up on Thanksgiving as well. And, you know, when you talk about giving thanks for things, yeah, that's a group that we need to thank.
Yeah, and the thing about veterans, and I had a two big brothers, big sisters. I had a big brother that mentored me as a youngster. And Tommy Kramer, he didn't really say much, and he was just always there. He was the one to pick me up and take me to the baseball practices, and he stood behind home plate, and as I was out there in the field, and behind in the batter's cage, giving me encouragement. And I think a lot of times I know this that our veterans do so much as far as for youth and for the future and mentoring, and have a lot of fond memories of Tommy and think back as far as that time in my life. I was fortunate enough to give back as a big brother myself. It's a tremendous organization and very empowering as far as with youth and things along those lines. So as we're talking, I know that we had some really cool things going on with the Children's Services Council, the Palm Beach Substance Awareness Coalition, which very big part of. Kind of switching gears here. Talking about youth and children. The lunch, awards luncheon was very empowering. So for our listeners, may want to go over a little bit about how that all worked and what the involvement and things along those lines was, or?
Well, we had a real successful, it was our 5th annual, Community Champions Award luncheon, where, those in the community that are doing great things in, supporting prevention, substance prevention. And we've looked at it now. We sort of broaden that. It certainly is people have done for our youth and families, but also just across the county in a variety of fields. So the community itself nominates the winners, and then there's a vote. It's a voting process, and we had a tremendous group that was nominated this year, from our elected officials to our media experts to our youth. You know, most importantly. Dr. Moran from Family Center on that list as well, it was our most well attended event we've had ever, and everybody just, you know, the bottom line, it was a chance to, more importantly, it's a chance to celebrate what the positive things this community is doing around this issue. We are so used to hearing the negatives. The negatives are the things that I guess are what more people would be interested in reading or seeing or listening to, but the positive stories in the grand scheme of things far outweigh the negative, but we don't give a lot of light to that. And I think celebration is something that we take for granted. And you know, we don't celebrate the things that are truly meaningful sometimes, and the efforts of everybody that was part of that event that was nominated has done so many meaningful things for the community this year that it was just a great chance for them to see that.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it was phenomenal as far as to see the turnout, as far as people from different treatment facilities, and as far as, you know, Captain Houston Park was there, Vice Mayor Melissa McKelly was there, a lot of people from the community. It was an outstanding way to really kind of celebrate, like you're saying. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Family Center for Recovery Show, and I'm your host, Peter Nathan, and with me today, very special and good friend of mine, Michael Robbins, and we're talking about, as far as giving thanks, especially as we head into Thanksgiving week and coming up in a couple weeks here, as far as some of the good things, and a lot of good things that are going on in a community and what we can celebrate here in South Florida. As we're talking, Mikey, your thoughts?
Well, there's some more, as we look at working on the issue of our opiate crisis right now. There's some great work that's happening across the county. Certainly what our friends over at the state attorney's office, Al Johnson, Dave Ehrenberg, what they have going on over there, it's a tremendous group with the Sober Home Task Force. They're looking at the tough issues, and these aren't just easy decisions. These aren't easy solutions, but the dialogue is there. The innovative ideas are there. And I think that that's really important. You mentioned Captain Houston Park, and the work they're doing with the heroin task force. Their pilot is up and going. They're going to be expanding that program. And again, that was because of the efforts of someone said, hey, we got to do things differently. And of course, our very own Recovery Awareness Partnership. Shameless plug, 9:30 Tuesday. We'll see you there. We'll call that the official invite. How's that sound, Peter?
That sounds good. We've also, as I understand it, too, I mean, the Sober Home Task Force that Dave Ehrenberg, Al Johnson had up, I mean, there's a lot of people from various treatment facilities. I know Dr. Moran's a special invitee as far as this money coming up. But that's open to the public, isn't it?
Anybody can kind of show up. Monday's meeting is open to the public. Actually, if you go to the website, just go to the state attorney's website, and you can get the calendar. You can get all the minutes, and it's a very open, transparent process. It's a great opportunity to share. But like anything, you need to get involved. Much like all the task forces here, from Sober Home to the Heroin Task Force to the Recovery Awareness Partnership to our friends at CIPRA, to our friends at CEFRA, to our friends at the Delray Drug Task Force. These are all incredible groups and incredible people that are really, truly trying to find solutions to this. And it was great, too, is that the groups that I really want to talk about, too, is we have so many wonderful moms and family members out there that are advocating and just taking initiatives on their own just to try to make a difference today. You know, the goal, one life saved, is just an incredible – every life is important in this epidemic. So making sure that all these groups are getting the support they need, and again, it's the invitation. Please get involved in these efforts, because the solutions come from the community, and it's not a top-down approach. This is a grassroots, this is an on-the-ground sort of operation here. So we need people to get involved.
Excellent. With that, we'll be back after a short commercial message. Thanks for listening to us, and we'll be right back after this message.
Listening to the Family Center for Recovery Show. Find out more about the Family Center for Recovery on facebook.com/Family Center for Recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
As a teacher, having a foster grandparent in my room, it enables me to have an extra set of hands. foster grandparents are role models, tutors, and friends to children with exceptional needs.
It's been fantastic having Grandma Freddie in our room.
It is the best feeling in the world.
I'm a bad student because of her.
To learn more about how to become a foster grandparent and help children in need, call 1-800-942-2677 or visit SeniorCorps at nationalservice.gov.
Are you looking for a new career path? Want to make a difference in your community? Become a teacher. The American Board can help you earn a teaching certificate and a Florida teaching license in a year or less. American Board's online program allows you to set your own schedule for a price that fits your budget. Visit www.americanboard.org. That's americanboard.org for more information on how you can become a Florida teacher.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, fcfrmd.com. That's fcfrmd.com.
We are back. Tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan, with me today. Very special guest, good friend of mine, Micah Robbins. We appreciate you making this a part of your Sunday afternoon. Maybe you're catching up on some reading, doing some chores around the house. So we certainly do appreciate making this a part of your Sunday. Micah, I know that the schools have a lot of contests going on, things like that. So for our listeners,
they're a little busy over there.
New things that are going on.
Sure. Well, the coalition for, gosh, and Alexa, please forgive me, but I think it's 9 years. 8 years? I mean, we're talking long-running program that our very own Alexa Lee does a fabulous job with. It's the school bus poster contest, which is a wonderful environmental strategy that encourages, it's every kid in every student, I shouldn't say kid, every child, every student in Palm Beach County schools are invited to participate if they so choose. They can put in an entry for a school bus poster that has a nice prevention message in underage or substance use, and that the winners, and we select winners from all grade levels and grades elementary, middle, and high school, and they do a fantastic job. Every year we get hundreds and hundreds of entries, and that the winning posters then get produced and put inside all the hundreds and hundreds of buses across Palm Beach County and seen by, I think it's 78,000 students a day riding those buses are getting infused with positive messaging and thoughtful messaging about making good choices around your brain and substance use. So really great project. This year, two new exciting things happening, in part because of our friends from Family Center for Recovery. We have a video contest this year and an essay contest this year. So that's an opportunity to talk about and share experiences, either how to prevent and the things that young people do to keep themselves safe from those issues, or their own stories of how they've dealt with some of the issues in their lives. And it's a great way to share and a great way to tell a story. And we look forward to hearing about that because we want to do as much as we can for our young people as possible. So it's been a wonderful partnership between the school department. They do great. The transportation department, they do great. And but for any parents and students that want to get involved, I should mention, too, that there's big old prizes for the winners.
Yeah, I was going to say.
This isn't like you get a bag of candy corn. You know, this is like $500 for the winner, you get the chance to, if you're sort of the essay or the video, you're going to come on here on the radio show and talk to, get a little public airwaves. And then, of course, we have the South Florida Fair, which is a wonderful partner in this, too. And in January, all the winning entries, not just the ones that go in the buses, are displayed like an art show over at the South Florida Fairgrounds in a wonderful, prominent pavilion. So it's going to be seen by hundreds and hundreds and thousands of your fellow Palm Beach County residents. And it's just a great way to share messaging and show how young people truly have a great voice. They have wonderful creativity, and they are such an important part to all of this solution. And so we encourage all of our young people to get involved. So if you hear that, go to pbcsac.org. There's a banner school bus big thing to click, and it'll take you right there. And Again, if not, you'll see a little email there. You can email our friend Alexa, Alexa Lee at pbcsac.org. Or heck, you can send me an email, but I'll just send it on to Alexa. But Micah Robbins at pbcsac.org. But it's, again, it's been going on for a number of years. It's very successful and a wonderful project. And I think actually, Peter, coming up, some great kids that do some nice leadership development around a number of issues here for our own teen CIA, Teen Coalition in Action. I think they're going to be invading your airwaves to talk about some of the things that they're doing. And they just did a fabulous job a few weeks ago. We had a big youth summit, and they did a great, great job. We had, almost just shy. We had like 79 young people join in on that to come together, work together, meet new young people, look at some skills and knowledge around substance use, substance knowledge, and then they worked together to create their own messages, how they would want to share a message about making good choices around substances and, more importantly, about their brain, because they have a new program called Hashtag Not My Brain. And we're really looking at the value of the brain and how important it is to protect that, because actually had a question came to me yesterday, and someone said, well, what's your definition of adolescence? I said, well, you know, it's kind of a couple different ones, but, you know, if you think about the brain development, adolescence really starts at puberty and doesn't end until the brain is fully developed. So for males, you know, the full adult brain doesn't stop developing till about 23, 24 years old. And yes, gentlemen, the women's, they develop much faster. It is true. Well, some may say the men's never stop, really never finish, and women are kind of on it. But you got to look at that. So that vulnerable period is much longer than they think. It isn't just the magic number between like 11 and 17. It's a process. So we want to work on keeping those brains safe. So by all means, you see something positive about brain health, or something you say, hey, that's not a good thing for your brain. Well, when you get on your Instagram account or your Snapchat or whatever, just throw a hashtag not my brain, and share that with the world, because that's an important thing, too, is that people need to know that our young people are seeing the positive, but they're also identifying the things that can be harmful to them as well.
Excellent. The teen show, I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be a couple weeks, and Alexa and I have been kind of emailing back and forth, and teens, I guess, they kind of meet online and Facebook, and I've already kind of formatted the show and some of the input that I'm receiving. And I mean, just to see as far as what they're interested in and their involvement as far as in ordinances and prevention, and really kind of the caring part as far as amongst other students and the awareness and things such as that. So very exciting. Really looking forward to that. So they've been on before, and it's so cool to just see what's going on. And they bring so much vitality. Yeah, the energy is just is so cool to see. So really looking forward to that show. I know that we're kind of looking at other states have been, everybody's kind of looking at different solutions, just kind of switching gears here. And I know as part of the coalition, we went over, there was a plan or something going on in New Jersey. Could for our listeners kind of go over a little bit what's going on in New Jersey these days?
So. Well, if people aren't aware, New Jersey has been one of the hardest hit states with the opiate crisis, and they really took, they already had some great systems in place. Their story, and that's a STORI, that's an acronym, but as most acronyms we know, tell me what that actually means. I just go by story. But story was their response, statewide response to the opiate epidemic, and it was a collective effort coordinated by the state using public and private sources to look at a more comprehensive view. So really, from someone who's coming in, say, through the emergency room or in acute need, getting them peer support specialists, hooking them up with some case management and navigating that system for them, and really making a community effort, has been very successful there. And they actually rolled out the entire plan, if you will, and it was an expansion plan back in March of 2017. So we had the you know, the big announcements coming out of here, you know, we really in May or so, but the 21st Century Cures Act was signed into law last January prior to President Obama leaving office. And New Jersey jumped on it. So, I mean, this was like January. And then by March, this was March 9th, I think, they had a plan done and implemented. And what they did was they were able to build on the strengths they had and did some expansion as opposed to trying to reinvent the wheel. And what is nice to see is that other states are and I personally am on the phone with New Jersey looking at what the efforts are there and how we can coordinate with them. You know, here our own Sober Home Task Force is looking at other states. That's how the pilot program came into play. That's based on a study out of Yale. And, you know, we are all in this together, and we have the resources here. Now, our environment might look a little different than New Jersey, but the approaches can be utilized in a very similar way. And certainly there are other programs, too, because we have such a large population here in Florida that have found themselves in Florida and in the throes of a deep addiction, and we need to get help, either getting public support for them. I mean, our good friends at Drug Abuse Foundation are just doing amazing work, but, you know, they're inundated. And our emergency rooms are inundated. We're having hundreds and hundreds of overdoses a month. So trying to find a good avenue to support for them, too. So we're looking at some programs that help Willie with our indigent. There's a wonderful program up in Baltimore called the Helping Up Mission, which is pretty much all levels of support, right from someone just, hey, if they just need to come off the street and have a meal and a place to stay for the night, they'll start there because, you know, the key to this is it's an entry point. So take all of your roads and paths to recovery. You have to have an entry point. Someone has to have that communication and that willingness, but also just someone to help them. And maybe they're not ready then, but hey, you've started that conversation. You've started that dialogue. So we are looking at a number of those programs as you know, pieces of this puzzle, and then coming up with solutions that are going to best fit this community. But it's a tremendous process, and it can be a frustrating process. You know, because this is one epidemic where, you know, any pause, any time, it equals lives. It equals lives. And that is just, it can be overwhelming at times. But we need this response. And, you know, everybody is, from the governor on down, people are trying to make good decisions and put good support out there. And it's getting close. The plans are coming together. You know, the pilots have been out there. There's research that's being done. We have a tremendous private treatment industry down here. We have a public treatment environment that's, you know, it's doing the best they can. But like anything else, it's getting support in the right places at the right time, doing the right things. And that's going to take the work of everybody. And that's why, as we came about, you know, kind of full circle talking about our groups working on this thing, we have a number of great community groups, great number of thought leaders, and you know, people forget that a lot of the best treatment in the country was developed and supported, and it's ongoing here right now in South Florida. So the positive stories are important to tell, but getting involved, I keep saying it, I keep coming back to it, it's about getting involved, getting educated, learn about these issues. If you read a story, dig a little deeper, find out some information. So we are we're definitely looking at it, but we certainly want to thank our friends up in New Jersey, up in Maryland, up in New York, up in Long Island. You know, there's just some wonderful work happening, and you know, we're looking at this as a big picture to save at least one life. You know, anytime we do anything.
We're going to be going to a short commercial message, and we're going to be continuing our conversation with Mike. We're going to be talking about solutions, positive things that are going on, and as we remember our veterans this weekend. Thanks for listening to us, and we'll be right back after this short commercial message. Thank you again, and we'll be back soon.
Family Center for Recovery is the only facility in Florida owned and operated by an addiction psychiatrist, Dr. Robert Moran, and he's dedicated his life to helping the people no one else will. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Are you looking for a new career path? Want to make a difference in your community? Become a teacher. The American Board can help you earn a teaching certificate and a Florida teaching license in a year or less. American Board's online program allows you to set your own schedule for a price that fits your budget. Visit www.americanboard.org. That's americanboard.org for more information on how you can become a Florida teacher.
Premature birth is the number one killer of babies. Those who survive often face birth defects and complications that affect them for life. For hundreds of thousands of families in the United States, this is the hardest thing they will ever have to face. And it's even harder on the baby. March of Dimes is providing education and support to families and funding life-saving research to give every baby a fighting chance. You can help. Do something today. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
And we are back. You've tuned into the Family Center for Recovery show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. And with me today, very special guest, good friend of mine, Micah Robbins, and we're talking about, we're actually talking at break about things like mental health. And I just kind of actually, I mean, took me a while, but as I listen to Dr. Moran, and I go to these meetings, and I read, and I hear, and what I'm starting to gather is that, you know, substance use, addiction, it's a form of mental health. So it's actually included with things like bipolar, schizophrenia, depression, borderline. So it's not outside of it. It is actually included in with and is a form of mental health. Am I correct? It's an epiphany in my mind, but am I correct?
I mean, you're absolutely right. And I think, unfortunately, mental health, it goes hand in hand as one of our leading health crises in America. And look, we just talked about the veterans at the top of the show and how those disorders are twice as prevalent for our veterans, especially suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome and some of the other components. But absolutely, I mean, you're looking at, you know, there's almost 45 million people in this country that are suffering from some sort of mental illness. And then, you know, out of that, 20% or so, about 9 million, well, that's about 10%, 9% that have a mental illness and, by the way, are also have a substance use disorder. And substance use disorder is another, you know, it's a disease of the brain. So a lot of times what happens is what they call co-occurring is that someone has a mental illness, so they either self-medicate or they'll use these substances to deal with the effects of that because the situation just gets worse and worse and worse. And also a lot of our folks that are suffering from a mental illness, they might be medicated as well. And once that regimen is either not followed or they may not have the proper supports or whatever the situation is, you know, other substances can come into play. So we don't talk about, I mean, mental illness is usually a root cause of a substance use disorder. And either depression or bipolar or what, you know, pick, grab your DSM-5 and just run your finger through the pages. And the need for us to address this chronic issue of mental illness in our country. And, you know, you want to look at some of the tragedies that have befallen us in the last week. I mean, you can't we can't recover fast enough from the horrible stories from Las Vegas to Texas. I mean, there's, you know, it's a sad day when you know, lives are taken and lives are ruined forever by the acts of individuals when many of them, I mean, in the final analysis, were suffering from some sort of mental illness. And we have to address that issue. We have to look at this as a root cause. We have to put the research and time and support into it and stop separating these things out and saying, hey, it's one or the other. It's these things all work together. And we need to have, you know, we have wonderful advocacy here with our Mental Health Association, with NAMI. We have a big chapter of NAMI here in Palm Beach County and in Florida. And we talk about this a lot. It's like, how do we get that message out that it isn't, you know, the underlying issue in many of these cases is mental illness. And I mean, depression in this country is just through the roof. We definitely need to be addressing this, and we see the effects. We see the effects on families. We see the low-lying effects, just people trying to work and sort of struggle through the day, to the absolute worst extremes of these issues when we see horrible tragedies where lives are lost and communities are just broken. If we're not looking at mental illness, we are. Sadly mistaken, and we are we're not going to get ahead of this curve in any way.
I mean, the thing about it is really it's the stigma that's really pretty much associated with it, and people just don't really want to talk about it. But one of the things with the Children's Services and the essay contest is talking about mental health is our youth. And as I continue to visit with youth and their interests, they want awareness. They want to know more. And yes, they're self-medicating quite often. A lot of times alcohol seems to be the choice as far as when somebody's going through depression. But, you know, the tragedies, Sandy Hook, I know, locally here with Austin Harrif, the lives that have changed forever. But the thing about it is that what we need to do is we need to get out there and we need to do something. We need to help. And that's the other thing, too, I guess, that our legislators and our lawmakers, as we continue to visit with and talk with about the opioid crisis and epidemic, there's also looking at mental health. And yes, addiction is considered a mental health, but also we need to address the other areas too, that I think they are now starting to understand that really you need to do something about, and not cut funding, but need to increase funding. We need to do something awareness wise. Am I correct in kind of our thoughts and talking about this?
Well, is usually what happens is the things that are needed most are supported the least, and prevention, quality mental health care, all those things, family supports, all the things that are like the front page of any of these documents that come out, you know, the proposals, like these are the things that we really need, are wind up being either an afterthought in funding or not funded at all. And, you know, we are real good at reactionary support. We're real good at sort of throwing resources at issues and not getting to the hard work of trying to unravel why these things are happening. And I'm not trying to be a naysayer or anything like that. We get it. It's not an easy process at the legislative level either. And we have incredible legislators that are working on these issues. But there will come a time when we really got to put the effort in the root causes of this. And with mental health, it's one of those things. And funding is scant. Florida, good gosh, we rank in the bottom when it comes to funding mental health and supporting mental health causes and issues. Prevention, it's certainly discussed, but it certainly is not supported in any way, shape, or form to the level that it probably should be when they're considering it the number one resource we have, you know, prevention programs and prevention messaging and getting knowledge and getting information and mobilizing and educating our families and our youth on these issues. It gets the least amount of support. If people talk about it, it is certainly mentioned. It certainly gets the front page solution, but we have to get support for it. And, you know, some of that comes from the grassroots, people being intentional, people getting away from that stigma. I think that's starting to change. You go back 10, 20, 30 years ago, you go back 40, 50 years ago, and you want to talk about mental illness, it was handled quite easily. They just put you away and that was the end of it. That's not the case anymore. People are living with mental illness. They can be thriving with these issues as long as it is addressed and it's properly and professionally taken care of, and people can live with their needs and people can be supportive of that. So we have to get out there. We have to talk about this. And for those, this is, hey, this is a little shout out to our good friends in Tallahassee and other levels. You know, we understand the challenges you face. Every day is a difficult day with a budget pen, with all the responsibilities happening. But, you know, we have millions of people here in Florida that are in need of help. And it only benefits everyone when we have a much healthier, safer population. And so I encourage that conversation to continue. And I wish the best to our leaders that are taking that under the belt, because, you know, we need you up there, and we're here to support you.
Yes, I know that our lawmakers and legislators, that there's a lot of programming and there are a lot of programs in place. And veterans this weekend, as we're thinking of our veterans, I know that unfortunately there are a lot of veterans that are homeless. And, you know, to come back after, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6 tours, maybe even just about one tour, and, you know, getting an and the help that they so much needed is such an important part. And I know that our lawmakers and legislators are working in that area, have programs in place, but we need to do more. And I think that when they're contacted by our listeners, that that does help. So as we're talking, your thoughts. I know we've got a lot of really neat things that are going on. We've talked about a lot of really cool things. MAT. I've got a lot. I'm reading and hearing a lot about it. What have you kind of heard? What's going on with MAT, and what does MAT stand for our listeners?
Well, it's a real interesting conversation, because MAT, I mean, stands for medically assisted treatment. Apologize to the good doctor yesterday I was speaking to. I want to get his name incorrect, but he said we got to kind of move away from that medically assisted treatment. They're looking at like medically assisted recovery too, because it is a tool. So everybody understands, there is no magic pill. There is no silver bullet in any of this. But there are tools out there, and what they're referring to, I mean, medically assisted treatment protocols have been around for a long time. People are familiar with methadone clinics and, you know, that sort of model, which is still in up and going, has actually a tremendous amount of positive data behind it. But what a lot of people are talking about now are Suboxone maintenance programs, Subutex, and other derivatives of that, of buprenorphine regimens. And these aren't new by any means. You know, these came out in the early 2000s and have been, you know, a lot, quite frankly, widely used around the world as a bridge. But what they recommend is that it's a taper. It's something that can get you. What it does, it basically takes away that desire to use other opiates, but it's not something you want to stay on, because you're basically going to be on that. So, you know, what SAMHSA recommends is an appropriate medically assisted, when I say medically assisted, actually supervised by a doctor that's qualified to distribute this and put you on an appropriate regimen, and also combine it with the other most important tools to recovery, you know, cognitive behavioral therapies, the social skills. All the tenets of an abstinence-based program, moving them towards, the idea is to move them off of this towards abstinence and a full recovery. And is it a tool? Absolutely. Is it something that is now being pushed heavily? You're hearing a lot more about it. Of course, there's a lot of push at the national and federal level. There's going to be a lot more information coming out. But, you know, bottom line, it is a tool in the toolkit to help deal with this issue. There's a lot of opinions about it. There's a lot of valid opinions about it. There's a lot of passion behind both ways, combinations, this and that. But, you know, the black and white of it is, you know, it is a tool in the toolkit. And we're going to be learning a lot more about it going forward.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of people forget about, is that T, the therapy part, that's so important, as far as not just medically assisted and Suboxone and off somebody goes and they're cured. There isn't a cure, but if you do have the therapy and it's administered by a doctor, and There's follow-up, continuum of care. People can make great strides. We'll be right back after this commercial message. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back.
Like the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook to learn more about their mental health service and Addiction Resources Center. Located in Lantana, Florida, the Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers can't. Call anytime, 855-202-4220. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
Premature birth is the number one killer of babies. Those who survive often face birth defects and complications that affect them for life. For hundreds of thousands of families in the United States, this is the hardest thing they will ever have to face. And it's even harder on the baby. March of Dimes is providing education and support to families and funding life-saving research to give every baby a fighting chance. You can help. Do something today. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.
As a teacher, having a foster grandparent in my room, it enables me to have an extra set of hands.
Foster grandparents are role models, tutors, and friends to children with exceptional needs.
It's been fantastic having Grandma Freddie in our room.
It is the best feeling in the world.
I'm a best student because of her.
To learn more about how to become a foster grandparent and help children in need, call 1-800-942-2677 or visit SeniorCorps at nationalservice.gov.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
Thank you, and we are back. Listening to the Family Center for Recovery show, your host, Peter Nathan. We greatly appreciate you making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. With me today, very special guest, good friend of mine, Micah Robbins, and we're talking about the therapy component, and yeah, I mean, we need people. We need therapists and educators, and we're talking about FAU, which I know Dr. Moran is actually a member of the faculty over at FAU, actually at Cornell and University of Miami and Nova and Erie, Pennsylvania, Erie College. Those are the ones I know about. I know there's a million. But anyways, as you're talking, FAU, please, Micah.
His list of credentials is longer than my resume.
Yes.
What has been wonderful to learn and also to see the responses that our education community, our higher education community, I should say, has really been taking a lead at how we deal with this at all levels. So FAU is now, I mean, they have an addiction sciences department that is looking at both the as I was described, the soft bench and the hard bench. So the hard science as well as the softer sciences in dealing with this issue. So looking at actual a lot of what's happening at the cellular level, the molecular level in the body, and how that things can be predictors and genetic predictors, et cetera. And then how do you translate that into supports in the cognitive behavioral world, and just incredible work there. And then on the beginning side of things, our friend Dr. George Stupas, right at Palm Beach State, just did a nice presentation for the coalition and the task force a couple weeks ago. And what a resource right in the backyard for those that want to seek. They have a true certificate component and an associate's degree component right now. They're working towards a baccalaureate component in addiction sciences, and getting that peer support, getting that CAP, getting those different credentials that are desperately needed right now. FAU, actually, I'll put a plug to our good friend Justin Kunzelman, who, Jason, about 30 minutes or so is, or Let's see what time it is here. Like 30 minutes is going to be down at Nova, working with, I believe, close to 100 pharmacy students to talk about naloxone and the history and use and what's happening with that. And that's coming right out of what our community does. So, you know, the resources are there. Our friends at Palm Beach Atlantic as well, their master's program in counseling is tremendous. They're getting out in the community. So I think that when it gets to that level, there's always, I mean, these programs have been around, but they are really looking at reaching out to the community, meeting a community need, trying to build up this incredible group that we need to address the issue, and they're doing it at the highest of academic and scientific levels, and that's really a huge part of the puzzle as well. So to see that response and to see how effectively, thoughtfully, and quickly they've put these things together is just tremendous. So we can't thank our academic community enough for the work they're doing, and really excited to see the results. Really excited to see the results.
Yeah, the program over at Palm Beach State College with Dr. Stupas, George Stupas, I'd actually been through that program. It's like 7 classes, and the information, and you know, if somebody's looking to you know, maybe career change or get into a field human service related, or they're already in that field. Because what I'm gathering as I talk to people is that a lot of master's degree level or people with they're different, but the understanding of addiction and things along those lines. It's a well put together program by many highly trained professionals, doctors, and I encourage anybody that's interested in learning more, potentially interested in that field. It would be a great place to look. Also, I know that Dr. Stupas wrote an article that's going to be in Sober Living.
Sober World.
Sober World. I always get that mixed up. Sober. It's World, the world of soberness. So anyway, so. As we're getting ready to wrap up here, Micah, your thoughts for our listeners the week ahead, what are some things that they might want to grab onto and kind of keep with them and think about?
Well, my goodness. First of all, I can't say it enough as we roll through Veterans Weekend. Please, for those that you know have served, thank them for their service. Make an effort to get involved and do something. Do something positive for our veterans. Even if it's just a phone call, even if it's just a visit, if it's a parent, if it's a sibling, if it's a family member that has served, don't forget to pick up that phone and call and say thank you. And then we need to remember what they've done for us and what they are now going through. So from myself, certainly thank you for everyone for their service. But for the rest of the community, let's get involved. And looking at the week ahead, let's keep an eye, our eyeballs open. You know, we have the White House has done a lot of work. We should be seeing the final report coming out on what the response is going to be to the opiate. We got a few teasers, but we'll see what they finally come up with. So that's going to be very exciting, very interesting to see what's going to be happening there. And certainly if you have young people, you have students here in Palm Beach County, please go to pbcsac.org and get all the information to get involved in the poster, essay, video contests that are happening. And let's see your creativity and see your great brains at work, because our best brains are our young brains. And we want to see those brains staying healthy and smart and making good decisions. So that's what's happening in this week ahead.
Excellent. And yes, you read my mind as far as, you know, if it's been a while since you picked up that phone and talked to somebody that you know who's a vet, they'd like to hear from you. You know, sometimes just a phone call or even just spending some time together, whether it's watching a ball game or just sitting reading or just visiting, to spend time with somebody who's a veteran can mean so much to in their world, in their life. And so, Micah, I can't believe it. Here we are. We've been another episode, and we're finished. So thanks for joining us. Great
in the can, absolutely, Peter. It's always a pleasure, and anytime. This is a wonderful opportunity. We got to talk to the community. This is great stuff. So I really appreciate what you're doing on this show.
Well, thank you. With that, have a wonderful week, everyone, and thanks again for listening to us.
This has been the Family Center for Recovery Radio Show. To learn more about the center or to send a link of the show, visit FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Join us next Sunday at noon for the Family Center for Recovery Show.
Thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the sponsors and don't necessarily reflect those of this station or iHeartMedia.
Buying a business trip at Upside.com, that is a huge win. They have the best available prices for flights, hotels, and rental cars. And they offer six-star treatment from their customer service specialists who are instantly accessible on the Upside app right now. At Upside.com, you can get a free pair of Bose SoundLink wireless headphones when you use code USA. That's Upside.com. You deserve a better business trip. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy.
Or maybe he's teething.
Maybe it's just a phase.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Think your child might have swallowed the wrong medication, gotten into your household products, had a reaction to a bite or a sting? Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. Save the number. Save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
News Radio 1290, WJN. Know. What's next?
North Korea.
Happens here.
Time is quickly running out.
News Radio 1290 WJNO, West Palm Beach.
We must act fast. Hopefully China will act.
Remembering the victims.